What happens when doing your job becomes a crime? Ruth Jefferson, a Black labor and delivery nurse with 20 years of flawless service, faces this impossible reality when a white supremacist father demands she never touch his newborn son. The hospital complies without hesitation, placing a post-it note on the chart, "No African American personnel to care for this patient." Days later, when that same infant stops breathing while Ruth stands alone in the nursery, she freezes, caught between her medical oath and an explicit order not to touch him. Those seconds of hesitation will destroy her life. Despite her immediate CPR and the arrival of the full medical team, baby Davis dies. The grieving parents accuse Ruth of murder. At 3 a.m., police shatter her front door, drag her out in her nightgown, and tackle her teenage son to the ground while neighbors watch in silence. This isn't just a story about one nurse's nightmare. It's about the racism we've learned to ignore, the privilege we refuse to acknowledge, and the uncomfortable conversations America desperately needs to have. Ruth has spent her career being twice as good to get half as far. She's mastered code switching, perfected her diction, pressed her scrubs to crisp perfection, all armor against prejudice. As the only Black nurse on her floor, every mistake reflects not just on her, but on her entire race. Her mother Lou, who worked as a housekeeper, taught her that survival meant never giving ammunition. You don't go to school with a stain on your shirt, because if you do, people aren't going to judge you for being sloppy, they're going to judge you for being Black. Kennedy McQuarrie, Ruth's white public defender, embodies well-intentioned ignorance. She genuinely believes in justice, but approaches it through a colorblind lens, convinced mentioning race would hurt her client's chances. When she takes Ruth's case, she establishes ground rules. They won't discuss race at trial. It will make the jury uncomfortable, she explains, revealing the privilege of someone who's never had to think about her skin color. Ruth is stunned. How can they ignore the central issue? You say you don't see color, but that's all you see. You're terrified to acknowledge I'm Black. When Ruth forces Kennedy to go shopping together, watching employees repeatedly approach only Ruth to help, checking only Ruth's receipt at the exit, Kennedy's eyes finally begin to open. Turk Bauer's chapters reveal grief's transformation into hatred. After his brother's motorcycle death, his grandfather channeled pain into racism through backyard boxing sessions, where each punch reinforced the connection between violence and racial superiority. A mentor named Rain introduced him to white power literature and neo-Nazi punk concerts that became his church, racist manifestos his scripture, and hatred his family. At a white nationalist gathering, Turk meets Francis Mitchum, a leader who straddles respectability and violence, wearing tailored suits while preaching genocide. Turk marries Francis's daughter Brittany in a ceremony performed before a burning swastika, their vows including the 14 words of white nationalist creed. What makes Turk's portrayal unsettling isn't his monstrosity, but his humanity. His genuine love for his son Davis coexists with virulent hatred. He tenderly cares for his infant while plotting racist violence, experiences real grief at Davis's death, even as it transforms into vengeful rage against Ruth. This duality forces us to confront how ordinary people embrace extraordinary hatred while maintaining their capacity for love. The trial exposes how the justice system perpetuates racism through silence. Kennedy's colorblind strategy focuses on Ruth's credentials and medical facts, avoiding race entirely. But Ruth has spent her career navigating microaggressions, patients requesting different nurses, colleagues questioning her decisions, security guards following her through hospital corridors. The prosecution, led by Odette Lawton, a Black woman, pursues the case with exceptional vigor, demonstrating how systems force the oppressed to participate in their own subjugation. Her aggressive prosecution proves her objectivity to white colleagues while betraying their shared experience of racism. As testimony unfolds, Kennedy recognizes how her legal strategy mirrors society's broader avoidance. Through Ruth's patient education, sharing stories of being followed in stores, representing her entire race professionally, constantly modulating her behavior, Kennedy's transformation begins. The question shifts from whether Ruth is guilty to whether justice is even possible in a system built on inequality. Motherhood reveals both connection and inequality. Ruth's mother, Lou, who delivered the Halliwell baby while working as their housekeeper, inspired Ruth to become a labor and delivery nurse. Lou warned that Black children face harsher judgment, a lesson Ruth internalizes by moving to a white neighborhood and pushing Edison toward excellence. These protections shatter when police tackle Edison during her arrest while neighbors watch silently. Kennedy's parenting contrasts sharply. When Violet asks if Edison's chain means he's a slave, Ruth explains that slavery isn't Black history, it's everyone's history. This crystallizes a painful truth. White parents choose when to discuss race, while Black parents must teach survival. Kennedy preserves Violet's innocence. Ruth warns Edison that a hoodie might prove fatal. The novel's most shocking twist: Brittany is biracial, daughter of white supremacist Francis Mitchum and a Black woman named Adele. The question of whether Turk would have loved Davis any less knowing this haunts him, beginning his journey away from hatred. Kennedy's transformation centers on recognizing what scholar Peggy McIntosh calls the invisible knapsack of white privilege, unearned advantages carried without awareness. Initially believing colorblindness is ideal, Kennedy is shocked when Ruth challenges this. Ignoring race means ignoring Ruth's lived experience. She learns that equality, treating everyone the same, differs fundamentally from equity, ensuring everyone has what they need to succeed. The revelation comes through accumulated moments. Kennedy walks through hospital security unchallenged while Ruth is stopped. Medical staff treat white and Black mothers differently. Media coverage shifts based on the accused's race. Kennedy recognizes microaggressions she'd previously overlooked: store clerks following Ruth, lawyers condescending to Black clients, the justice system treating defendants differently by race. In her closing argument, Kennedy addresses race directly, using a powerful metaphor. Racial privilege is like an airport moving walkway. Whether you acknowledge it or not, whether you're actively walking or standing still, you're being moved in a certain direction. By admitting her own racism and challenging the jury to recognize their invisible privileges, Kennedy becomes the advocate Ruth needs. Her transformation demonstrates that being colorblind isn't the answer. Seeing and acknowledging racial differences while actively dismantling systemic inequities. 6 years later, Ruth treats a man's daughter for strep throat. She doesn't recognize him until he introduces himself, Turk Bauer, his white supremacist tattoos now replaced by laser scars. Discovering Brittany was biracial shattered his worldview. He would have loved Davis unconditionally, regardless of skin color. This realization catalyzed complete transformation. He removed his tattoos, left the movement, and now works with the Anti-Defamation League, speaking about extremism's dangers. As Turk holds daughter Karis's hand, like we are at an intersection and it's my job to take her safely to the other side, the metaphor extends beyond his personal journey. He's guiding the next generation away from hatred, embodying the Martin Luther King Jr. quote that gives the novel its title. The novel challenges us to examine our own biases, recognizing that racism isn't just individual prejudice, but systems perpetuating inequality. Change doesn't require grand gestures or perfect understanding. It requires showing up, speaking up, and doing the small things that matter in great ways. Your voice in that uncomfortable conversation, your willingness to see what you've been taught to ignore, your choice to act rather than stay silent, these aren't small at all. They're everything.